BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening.
Hello and welcome to another BDNG episode in conversation with. My name is Emma Button and I'm the Events Education Lead for the BDNG. Today, the BDNG is in conversation with Emma, who is a pharmacist. Her Instagram page is also The Allergy Pharmacist, and she is here to talk about her role as a pharmacist and her passion for eczema and allergy management. So welcome, Emma. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how, as a pharmacist, your niche interest in eczema and allergies come about?
Hi, Emma. Thanks for having me on your show. So just a bit about me first. I did a degree in chemistry first from UCD, which is in Dublin. And then I went on to do my master's in pharmacy in Strathclyde University in Glasgow. And since that time, I've been a community pharmacist coming up on 18 years. So a long time. I have two children. So for the past 6 years, I've really had a specialist interest in asthma and food allergy and eczema. Yeah. Because both my children were affected by this. So I've done extra training with the Royal Imperial College in London, the paediatric allergy master's course there, just to supplement my knowledge. And I'm just super interested in it because of my children's experience and my own personal experience. But I found that from this personal experience, I've been able to kind of help other moms coming into my pharmacy and also on my Instagram page. That's what I try to do.
And I think it's important that that's where I sort of come into contact with you as well, is I come across your Instagram page and it's very informative and it's all evidence-based information. So I definitely thought, right, let's find out more about what you're up to. Sure you're helping many out there.
Hopefully.
So I guess my first question to you today would be, what do you see as the main challenges pharmacists face in the community when managing this cohort of patients?
I suppose the first experience I have with eczema in the community is really from new moms coming into the pharmacy with their little babies that have eczema or dry skin and skin issues. So that, because the pharmacy is on the street, you know, it's easy to walk into the pharmacy. You don't need an appointment. So that's kind of the first place people come. Pharmacists are in kind of a unique place to help the new moms, because you really don't know what you're doing, especially if it's your first child. And obviously it's concerning if your baby has itchy, dry skin and you don't know what to do. So I mean, pharmacists are in a great place, but there's probably not that much training from university on skin or any derm conditions, really. So there's a lot of on the job learning that you kind of get from experience more so than you know, proper training on how to treat eczema for new moms or not just new moms and babies, but everybody. I think, you know, there could be a bit more practical education for pharmacists.
Yeah,
you know, pharmacists like to get things right. You know, they're that kind of people, and they probably don't have the right training to really get it right. I know what to recommend now in the pharmacy because my children went through it and because I've seen dermatologists over the years. I kind of know which emollients to recommend and what to recommend in the community setting. So lack of training there for pharmacists to do this, and they're in a great place because, you know, also sorry, just for allergy as well.
Yeah,
they don't really know the connection between eczema and allergy, food allergy. they really don't know that eczema can lead to food allergy and how important it is to get that baby's skin seen and sealed up as quickly as possible.
Yeah, so the association between the two.
Yeah, and it's not a known kind of fact, you know.
And I guess the thing is as well, you're not alone. Because I think more than one healthcare professional group feel like that, that perhaps there isn't much dermatology training in practice. We experience it as well as nurses when we go okay. through our pre-reg. So it's not unless you really have specialist interest in the area, do you get much exposure, or perhaps if you had a placement there. Yes. And when I did my prescribing myself, I don't remember covering skin at all really in it, you know, in terms of where on the course, and that's something we're advocating for at the moment. I think it's important to highlight that your area of practice is Southern Ireland, isn't it? But however, we are still seeing common trends and themes that sort of go across the UK, Northern Ireland, and it sounds like they're similar across Southern Ireland as well.
I'm sure it is. I mean, you know, just looking at the whole of the patient's experience coming into the pharmacy, I guess, like the first kind of introduction you get to eczema is in babies. So, I mean, you're seeing moms coming in the pharmacy to get advice about their baby's skin. And I guess there is a knowledge gap, as we're kind of saying there, for pharmacists to really know how to treat eczema in the community setting when they just come in, and it's quite mild, you know. Obviously, if it's very bad eczema, or you know, they need to go and see the GP or a specialist, or you know, the dermatologist. But if it's mild, you know, there are definite things that you can recommend and do. So I suppose to talk about that, what the pharmacist can actually give. So it's, you know, emollients, which are leave-on emollients, and bath emollients. So they're the kind of two main ones. And I think pharmacists probably don't know that the amount of emollients that you have to use all the time.
The quantity, yes.
Like, I mean, it just could be like, put this on for a little while, but they don't really understand that, you know, it's a genetic eczema, it's a genetic condition. You know, and absolutely. Environmental, I guess, but you know, you need to maintain the skin at all the time to prevent it getting so bad that you might need to go on top of steroids. So,
and I guess that filters through because, for example, working together as healthcare professionals, perhaps we would write on the prescription, provide, you know, 500 grams a week or, you know, a certain amount of tubs for the patient before their next review. And then when you check in with that patient, perhaps they've had a much smaller amount provided. And there's other factors that come into play as to why that may have happened, including cost, you know, but it's very hard to then get that patient's skin under control. When you're asking for quite large quantities of emollients to be sent out. So yes, I can see that it's
I agree. And like I feel like I don't know if you want to talk about that now, but when I see the prescriptions coming from the hospital with the emollients on it, that's fine, that's great, and you know, that's what we give and we recommend using, but then they probably use it that one time from prescriptions from the hospital, and then they don't really get it again, you know. So there's they don't really understand that, you know, in between the flare-up with the topical corticosteroids, using the topical corticosteroids plus your emollients, then there's like a kind of a vicious cycle of another flare-up quite soon because the emollients haven't been used correctly, or not enough of the emollients have been used. So
I guess it's for us all singling from the same hymn sheet in a way, because if we provided, so if in a clinic I'd provided a treatment plan where I'm asking them to use it every day for 7 days, every other day for 7 days, and then go down, so that's with steroids, that if that message isn't reinforced when they go to collect it, then perhaps there's a communication issue for the patient and concordance breaks down.
Absolutely. And like I think talking about topical corticosteroids there, you know, the instructions are kind of confusing.
Yes.
For them, they're not used to putting on creams every day. Like there's practicalities like that that are it's annoying to have to put on creams every day, and they don't know how much they should be using of the topical corticosteroids. And even among the healthcare providers, like sometimes there's a lot of differences in prescription topical corticosteroids. Like some doctors like to give, like to give an example, like a very potent corticosteroid for a short period of time. Others like to give like a lower potency steroid cream for a longer period of time. Other things like there's not a consensus on like using steroids that are more potent for thicker areas of skin and, you know, like less potency for the face and the groin and all that. So you can see kind of a lot of differences. So it doesn't sometimes.
And it's mainly prescribing practice that you're seeing filter through from general practice rather than coming from secondary care.
Yes, probably. Yeah. And also, like, there's probably not that much emollients prescribed in the general practice. You know, it's more like the steroid cream to treat the flare up, and then, you know, that's kind of
and then you're not sure how long till that patient's seen again, you know, so
it's tricky, and it's kind of I think it's probably not that much, there's probably a lack of knowledge and training there for general practitioners, you know. Yes. For skin as well, like the same as pharmacists and probably nurses. I don't have a specialist interest, you know, because there's so many things that we have to help people with, you know. It's not like that focused in on the skin.
And it's definitely, for me, it's definitely been quite an interest for myself, because I run pediatric eczema clinics. And so you could start to see the breakdown in communication amongst the healthcare professionals. Yeah. So when it came to my recent master's dissertation project, I looked at pharmacists, but more than the UK, sort of worldwide, to see practices and common themes I was looking for in terms of why we were all not perhaps sharing the same messages. And most of it came down to the barriers and limitations to be education. So I guess, do you advise other pharmacists where to access education, or sort of champion education for them? Or
Like, I wish I knew where to do that, because that is actually a really good idea. And I could share it on my page, because I do have some pharmacists that follow me, but probably not loads. But that would be a great help. Apps available for, I know that they were talking about that, apps that could tell you when to put on the topical corticosteroid, you know, to kind of keep track of your emollient use, you know, to help you, because everything's, you know, on your phone now. There's probably lots of ways. Do you have any recommendations on websites or material?
To be honest,
or nurses.
It depends. The area I currently work in, we have agreed with the integrated care, but we have links to websites where one of our nurse consultants has actually made videos as well. So that really helps for people. Mm-hmm. You've got the Eczema Society. There's quite a lot of resources out there for patients. Like you said, I think everything's digital now as well. So the other way of looking at it is, if you are going to direct people to resources rather than giving them paper leaflets, we've been creating more QR codes, so people can scan things when they come in. What are the main sorts of questions that you have exactly when patients come in? Is it, how much should I put on, or I've run out of this already, or I'm not really sure what I'm meant to be doing?
I think it's more they don't know what they're, see, I feel at the start when they're babies, they come in with a new prescription and it's a bit scary, and they're scared of topical corticosteroids. They're only using like a tiny little bit because they're afraid that, you know, of the side effects and the skin thinning. And even pharmacists can pass on fears that they have about that onto the patients. And then you have this whole thing of non-adherence, and then that makes that the eczema actually doesn't become controlled because of fears from the parents and the pharmacists, not just the parents. So I do see that. Now, I do know, though, that as the patient gets older, they realize that you know, they followed the dermatologist's dermatologist's prescription quite well, because they're used to it. They know, like, that they have to do that, and they know that they have to use the potent steroid and then step down and all those kind of things. Sorry, I forgot the question there.
Mainly with patients, or, you know, or service users when they're coming in, the main sort of questions that they're asking you and the challenges that you're seeing.
Sorry, yes, yeah. So, yeah, no, again, it's kind of to do with how much topical steroid to use. I feel that the hospital or the GP don't use the fingertip unit measurement. And I know that pharmacists are taught that in their training, but that's definitely not used by pharmacists either. You know, there's no, you know, I mean, I feel it maybe if it was on the hospital prescription, the pharmacist would counsel the patient on that. I think that's quite important, because it's usually now just in a thin layer. You know, that's really the line used by GPs, pharmacists. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not on the prescription from, you know, the hospital or the specialist. So, you know, that's not really communicated to the person. So the person doesn't know how much to be putting on per body part.
Absolutely.
And, you know, not enough of it has been put on. So I think that's kind of an issue.
So I guess that leads me to ask you then, so in terms of collaboration with secondary care and community pharmacists, are there things that you can sort of think of that would be good? So you're saying there's sort of a piece that comes out about, you know, how the quantities that should be used. Is there any more that you think could happen to enhance education between?
Yeah, well, even if that could be put on the prescription, that would be really a great start, because the pharmacist might be like, oh, okay, the fingertip unit, and then look into that more, because it's definitely not used in the community. It's just like, here you go, here's your steroid cream, just put a bit on, thin layer, and, you know, that should work. But, you know, it has to be a kind of a shiny layer, has to cover the area, you know, all these kind of things are very important. Otherwise, the eczema doesn't get managed, and then you're using the steroid cream for a longer duration of time than maybe you should be, and then this is where problems arise.
Well, we mentioned that you're obviously getting the prescriptions through for maybe an emollient and a steroid. Do you ever get prescriptions through where it's the steroid but the emollient isn't on there, so you're then thinking, hang on a minute, you know, how
that as well, and that's good point, and that does happen. That happens a lot. And there's no emollients on it, and the pharmacists don't know to tell the patient to use emollients as well. So that could be written on it. Even, you know, I mean, if it, again, you know, pharmacists like to, you know, do whatever is on the prescription. So it would be good to communicate that to the community pharmacist.
Yes,
continue the care of emollients and how to put on the topical corticosteroids and for how long, and you know, how all that. But yeah, the emollients sometimes are not on the prescription, so this can be the pharmacist then just doesn't recommend emollients, because, you know, they don't, it's not a foregone conclusion that they're going to say, oh yes, you need an emollient. Like, I would
But yes, because of your extra training experience.
I know about it, and I understand, you know, so there's a lack of understanding, I think.
Yes.
For atopic dermatitis, lack of understanding and lack of training. And yeah, no, there needs to be more training.
So that sort of concludes that, doesn't it, in a way, of what we perhaps need to address at some point to help that.
Yeah, because there's no point in the hospital prescribing things and then it's not carried out in the community setting.
Exactly. And I think it's so important to have that working relationship with your pharmacist, because, you know, where I work at the moment in terms of secondary care, we have a very good relationship, that they know how to get hold of me as well. So they have my work mobile. They can ring me, the local pharmacy, to check, you know, you've said this and this, I just want to check. Yeah. So we've got that two-way communication. But I know that with time and resources, things can be difficult sometimes. Yeah. But it would be good if perhaps it's that communication, isn't it, that what we can do to bring it together, to make it more cohesive.
Absolutely.
And that came out of my project as well. I was looking and I thought, right, this would be the next steps.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'd love that in Ireland as well. Maybe I should start
campaigning
for that.
Yeah, campaigning and somehow some sort of training.
I don't know how how to do it, but it would be interesting to kind of get those points across, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And we very much sort of touched on the challenges there with eczema and topicals as a pharmacist for yourselves, but tell me more about allergies. So perhaps I'll ask, how often are patients coming to you or approaching you in community pharmacy with concerns of allergy?
Yeah, like, to be honest, it's not really that common to come in concerned about an allergy, because you know, if your child has a reaction to a food at home, it can be quite scary, depending on what the reaction is. But usually it's a bit of a it's a bit of a shock. And so the parent usually goes to the GP, you know, and then the GP is probably doesn't have a lot of training in allergy, so they're referred on to the hospital for skin prick testing and you know, food challenges and all that sort of thing. So yeah, not that often, I have to say. So it's the eczema kind of, that's, you know, obviously the start of food allergy. So that's kind of what I see. And I suppose that's, yeah, there's nobody really knows that it's the food allergy is caused from, you know, the food proteins getting on the broken skin barrier, and you know, the sensitization kind of occurs from that. So that would be a brilliant message. I'd love to get that message out there to other pharmacists as well, that it's so important to seal the skin as quickly as possible and treat the eczema like as quickly as possible to prevent food allergies in the future. I mean, I had one or two moms coming in worried about cow's milk allergy.
Yes, yeah.
Really not that much, you know, really not that much.
It's not that much, because very much when I was practicing as a health visitor, that was a very sort of on point thing where everyone, you know, there'd be a slight concern with the infant, and then it would be, it's the, you know, it's got to be a cow's milk allergy, you know. So it's quite tricky to have these conversations. So perhaps not just for pharmacists, but for nurses as well. Where would you, you've obviously now done quite a bit of training in allergy, where would you direct people to if they wanted to have more training in allergy and understand it a bit more?
I don't know.
where did you study where did you
get? I did parts of the MSc course, which you can do, like, they're short courses in food allergy and food hypersensitivity, and I'm sure there is one, there's some on eczema as well, and that's with the Imperial College in London. Which is excellent. And
did you do various remotely?
Sorry,
did you do it remotely?
All remote. It's all online. Now I think I did a few couple of weeks of it that you had to, it was a full week, you know, so I was off work, so that was during the day. Now I think you can I think they're recorded, so you can look at them in your own time, but like, if you're doing a full week, you probably need the time off work. But other ones I did just during the day, like 2 hours here and there, and they're brilliant. That's really where I look, and I look at the Eczema Society a lot for eczema guidelines and how that all works. But the food allergy, I've read all the research. Literally, I read everything that I could get my hands on, because I was trying to help my children.
of course.
So, you know, what I didn't know for my son, I kind of learned for my daughter, who was the second born, and she has benefited from my knowledge, you know, the second time round. Unfortunately, my son kind of, I didn't have as much knowledge then, but I've read like so much research, all the papers on, you know, food allergy and eczema and asthma a bit, but more so food allergy and eczema.
So,
and I love it. It's just,
you love it. You do love it because your Instagram, I can see how much you love it, and you have passion for what you do.
Yeah,
you know, and that's great.
Just nerding out on it, you know.
Can I ask about your Instagram as well? So obviously, you set it up. What were your main reasons for sort of setting up your Instagram, the allergy pharmacist?
Yeah, my main reasons were because, you know, when I got these first diagnoses of food allergy, it was such a shock. I remember crying, you know, when I heard my son had peanut, I couldn't believe it, you know, and being so like lost and didn't know what to do, and very isolating, because you know, not everybody around here has food allergies, even though a lot of people actually do. But, you know, you're a first time mom. So it really was to help first time moms have some kind of information, or to know that they weren't alone, and to share the information that I learned. So maybe, you know, that could help them prevent their children from having food allergy. You know, the eczema you can kind of maintain, but the atopic march, to kind of try and halt that atopic march, and to share that information. I don't think it's really widely known that allergy, you know, eczema equals food allergy equals asthma.
The association.
We kind of know that now, and obviously there's specialists that really know that and are really into it, but like not a lot of new moms would know that. So just really to do that. Yeah.
And I'm assuming you've had probably quite a positive response from it, looking at your following, which is brilliant. So hopefully it's really helped some mums out there. Have you had any negative responses on Instagram at all?
Yeah, I mean, I've had mainly positive ones from moms saying they love my page and they find it really helpful. And, you know, they I did a post about using how much topical corticosteroids to use on babies, which, you know, is from a research about sealing the skin for eczema, you know. Mm-hmm. Having if you use potent topical corticosteroids in babies to seal the eczema up, they have less allergies at 2 years of age. So that was really where I was coming from on my post. But I got a lot of negative feedback on that for topical steroid withdrawal syndrome, and people who are going through that. And, you know, they said that I didn't know what I was talking about. And, you know, there was a lot of negativity around it. Yeah, like the, you know, topical corticosteroids, I think people think they're kind of similar to anabolic or like oral steroids. So there is a fear around them. And also, well, there are adverse effects of topical steroids. There can be like skin thinning, spider veins, you know, hypopigmentation, all that sort of stuff. And potentially topical steroid withdrawal, which can happen usually if there's prolonged use of the potent, more moderate to potent steroids on the face or the groin. I think that's really where you see it the most. But yeah, I got a lot of negative feedback from people, you know, because they've had this experience with topical steroids that's been horrendous. And I was here recommended it in babies. So they couldn't believe it. But obviously, you know, I that's what's prescribed as a first line treatment for eczema in reality, like in the community, in reality, that's what I see every day.
Exactly.
And so,
did it put you off perhaps posting anything else about steroids as well?
I had another post ready on like how to apply topical corticosteroids and, you know, the best way to do it. That was my next post, and I didn't post it because you know, social media can be quite cruel sometimes. Like they don't really realize that there's a person behind that. So I did get, I kind of stepped back from my social media account a bit, probably from that time.
Yeah.
And took a bit of time off because, you know, who needs that?
Yes. And it can knock you. Yes.
Yeah. It can really knock your confidence and all that. So, I mean, I'm just trying to help people. That's where I'm coming from. And it's probably through the lens of allergy and food allergy that I'm coming from. But it did put me off.
So
what do you think about that,
about
topical
steroid withdrawal,
or like do you feel that people are put off using topical corticosteroids because of it?
Yes, they are fearful of topical steroid withdrawal. We have the Eczema Society statement. This is something I often just direct patients to. I'm not going to dismiss it to a patient, and I'm not going to also confirm that that's what that individual is going through at that time. I think, you know, I want to support my patients in the best possible way, holistically. So the biggest thing I find is my listening skills. I will sit and listen to what that individual's going through. And as you talked about the emollients there, you know, just try and explain how much I want to get their skin under control in terms of their chronic condition and the itchiness and the sleep. And we know that the long-term effects on milestones for children with eczema. Mm-hmm. So it's just being receptive to the patients, I think, when it comes to topical steroid withdrawal. And you can only give someone, you know, you can empower someone, you can give someone the information, but they can make the decision. If they've got the capacity, they can make the decision of what they want to do. So a lot of the time, I think you give the information and just wait. And often in consultation, decisions don't need to be made at that time. You know, I want someone to go away and have a think and come back. But it is a tough topic to discuss. I think that perhaps people do shy away from it. I think they do. It can be challenging.
It's very emotive for people, like, obviously, that have gone through it, and they, you know, they're very emotionally charged about that, you know, and passionate about, you know, not using topical corticosteroids.
Which,
you know, I know, but like, they're very helpful. Like, for my daughter's skin, just from a personal point of view, they worked wonders, and I really got it. I, you know, she was 4 months old when she started, and you just to see your baby with the oozing skin and the itching and the bleeding and heads and all sorts, it's so hard to see your baby like that. And I got great advice from the hospital. I got a great prescription, and I did, you know, I did all that they recommend me doing, and I used topical corticosteroids, and it was fantastic. It really helped. It sealed her skin up, and she doesn't have food allergies now as well. You know, she's grown out of
that's amazing.
All that as well. Now, I mean, obviously, you can't say that that's, you know, but, you know, sealing the skin up is obviously part of that. So it worked for us, let's just say, and it works for a lot of people.
I mean, that's such good news about your daughter, you know, and real challenging years for you there, it sounds like. In relation to sort of we've covered emollients and steroids and allergies and some of the challenges pharmacists face, and perhaps the need for more collaborative working between pharmacists, secondary care, GPs. Do you envision yourself sort of doing any more beyond sort of helping mums, and do you see your role evolving in terms of perhaps helping pharmacists now and where you want to go with things?
Absolutely. I have been my friend is like, you should really your target audience could change to, you know, healthcare professionals, nurses and doctors and pharmacists, to somehow supplement education on all these topics. I'd really be interested in doing that, and maybe that could be an area that I could branch into next on my Instagram page.
And if you had any take-home messages today for our listeners, so that's dermatology nurses, it sounds like, to me, the first one would be very clear instructions on a prescription. Do you have any other messages for us at all?
I think, like, it's good to establish, like, a plan for people, so they're not going on, they're not going home and they don't know what to do. So I think, like, a skincare routine plan would be an excellent thing to give them when they're leaving the hospital. You know, everything on it, like, don't stop moisturizing when the skin is clear. You know, how to apply the emollients, like, in a downward fashion against, you know, going in the direction of the hair growth, all those kind of things. Don't stick your fingers in the tub of emollients. That can lead to problems. You know, how much emollient they need to use per week. Maybe on the QR code, as you're saying, like, a plan of what you need to do every day. And like, there's loads of practical things as well, like that came up for me, like having a tub of cream downstairs and upstairs.
So practical tips, but also I guess often, particularly where I practice, we do have a plan for that patient. Okay. That goes on a letter to the GP and to the patient, but what it wouldn't do is you wouldn't see it. So then for the pharmacist, it's that missing element that you wouldn't, unless I'd printed it out and they'd taken it with them down to the pharmacy, it doesn't say, you know, necessarily, this is the plan, this is why I want you to keep re-prescribing, this is why we want it. It would go to the GP asking them to put it on a repeat, but we also know that GPs are really struggling out there as you know. So with perhaps it's what can we do to close the information
pharmacist involved, you know. Like, I don't know how it is in the UK now, but we get everything through email, you know, help mail now, prescriptions and everything. I think you do too, right?
Electronic prescriptions.
I mean, this could be included on the prescription from the hospital. Like, we get it on an email now, like a plan of what you could do, and a plan of like emollient use. You know, not just the topical corticosteroids, but this is what they should be doing, you know, every day. If that was included with the hospital prescription, I think that would work really well in the pharmacy setting, because usually they're buying it themselves. Let's face it. So they're usually not it can be on the prescription, but they're usually just buying it themselves if they're a private patient in Ireland anyway. But yeah, that would be great to include the pharmacist in that loop.
So, Emma, it's been a pleasure. So thank you for opening my message on DMs when I message you saying, hey, look, I want to know more about you, what you're doing, what's happening in Southern Ireland. You know, I'm really keen to sort of understand the relationship between nurses, pharmacists, doctors, and what we can improve. There's definitely things offline I think you and I will probably pick up and discuss. But for any of our sort of listeners out there, Emma's Instagram is, and I mentioned already, the Allergy Pharmacist. You can find her quite easily, and they're really great informative videos. So keep up the hard work, Emma.
Thank you, Emma. It was so great to talk to you.
And you.
Thanks a million. Keep in touch.
And you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.